Good afternoon and welcome once again to Upstarts. It's Friday. And Andy and Kelly are back with you and we're
live once again. 75 shows and that's the first time.
76 or 77 shows at this stage. And that's the first time I've managed to completely destroy the intro to the show. Congratulations, Andy. Thank you so much. I will now hang my head in shame.
It's definitely Friday.
It's definitely Friday. And we're fortunate enough to have Brendan Kilty back on, who you may remember was on the show previously talking about the James Joyce house. But what's more important today is we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people are faced with at the moment, a lot of businesses are faced with at the moment, and that's the topic of debt and what do you do when you get into debt, particularly when you get into quite serious amounts of debt. A lot of the time people can feel like there's no way out, and particularly for small business people, if they get into debt, maybe in their first business, there's a reluctance then to maybe try and start another business or go forward with anything else with all of that hanging over you. So with that in mind, Kelly, tell us a little bit more.
Well, as you mentioned, we have Brendan back on the show, and Brendan is a real life superhero because he does have the day job and he does have extracurricular activities. I don't know if you have the phone box that you change in, Brendan, or do you do it in this very special car that I've seen you drive?
It's very hard to find a phone box in Dublin. They're all disappearing.
With mobile phones, where do superheroes change? You know, they must have an app or something. It's all digital these days. But Brendan, thank you so much for coming back, because Andy said this is a very pertinent topic for individuals and for businesses. And before we go into that, for people who didn't hear you on the show previously, could you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey and how you ended up opposite us on the Upstarts desk?
Well, you know, life is a journey and there are crossroads, and we've met at a crossroads, and you're now deciding which direction to go.
Yeah.
The James Joyce house is at 15 Ushers Island. Since we met for the last show, we've had some exponential developments, and that word exponential is beginning to fuse in my mind with the word serendipity. So we've had some serendipitous exponential developments.
The most special kind.
Not quite an ecumenical matter.
And I couldn't even manage to get out, "It's Friday, hello."
Yeah, but you were sitting next to Kelly.
Oh, that's
now,
sweet.
So back to the day job. The James Joyce House, we're absolutely thrilled to say that we have crossed roads with Rory Manahan, chef, and we are developing a really wonderful range of Irish cuisine, Irish culture through food at the James Joyce House. And to be honest, this is a level I never thought we would get to. Okay. And then suddenly, when you're not panicking about it, serendipity kicks in and it all comes together.
Yeah.
And Rory has created some extraordinarily wonderful dishes. And we're doing that now at the James Joyce House by way of corporate entertainment between now and Christmas, a collection of lunches, dinners, and then afternoon tea, all with a Joycean theme, but with music and song as well. Something very, very special.
Wow. Brilliant.
You talked about 76, 77 shows. We had a dinner last Saturday, a gentleman, his 80th birthday. And I suppose it puts life into context that he's a GP, retired from Northern Ireland, and he said he stopped counting. This is your trip up that has triggered this tangent.
But see the purpose for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, serendipity.
Let's put life back into context, and I suppose there's a lead into discussion of debt, which is traumatic, D-E-B-T. But that gentleman stopped counting, he told me, after 78 of his patients had been murdered.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And we tend to forget that down here. You know, we were not touched by what people in the north are still living with.
Yeah.
And I say that deliberately just to try and put perspective on current financial debt.
Mm.
That, you know, there is always someone a lot worse than you, worse off than you. And financial debt is actually manageable. And I should know because I've come through a bucket load of it.
Okay.
The same as everyone. You throw a stone in Ireland and I think you're going to hit somebody. Put your hand out, you're going to touch somebody with legacy debt.
Yeah.
And the ones who are perhaps not showing the external signs are the ones who are perhaps living with a great internal trauma.
Okay. Yeah.
So it affects everybody.
Yeah.
So before we kind of go on to what you do to help these people, tell us a little bit about yourself, because other than the James Joyce House, you have kind of a background in the debt and the legal side and whatever else. So a little bit about your own history and kind of what made you focus on this area of the debt abatement.
Well, I am a senior counsel, which is a grant of a patent of precedence by the cabinet of all things. And the bulk of the work I would have done practicing in court work would have been in relation to commercial transactions. I have a background as a quantity surveyor as well. And within that construction industry, dispute resolution comes under a banner called arbitration. Mm. And that is, in a sense, an informal court. It could take place in a hotel room or wherever. And the only real requirement for an arbitrator is that he or she is acceptable to both parties.
Okay.
I have to say there have been changes in the legislation intended to improve arbitration, but in my mind they have destroyed it. And frankly, I have advised anyone who will listen that they should delete arbitration clauses from their contracts, because they give so much power to an arbitrator that if you're unlucky enough to find an arbitrator with attitude,
gotcha,
someone who's risen above the status, you know, that the title might give them in terms of competence, then you're bringing people into a horrendous cul-de-sac. And frankly, I think you'd be negligent to do so. And okay. I mean that most sincerely. And I say that as one of the founders of the Institute of Arbitrators here back in 1979, that I think it's destroyed itself. In many respects, alternative dispute resolution is now the new black. And within that, you have conciliation and mediation. And that's really what I'm here to talk about today. A mediation is a much more relaxed form of dispute resolution. It's absolutely confidential. The parties agree upon a mediator. And the mediator's job is to bring the parties together to their own decision, rather than an arbitrator who would impose
a decision,
an order on them. And in fact, an arbitrator, in many respects, is greater power than a high court judge, because the legislation is such now that when an arbitrator makes an order, that can be converted into a high court order.
Wow.
From which there is no effective appeal. And it is that lack of an effective appeal that I think has done for that process.
What kind of worries me there is you said that the only thing that the arbitrator really has to have is approval from both sides. I mean, surely they must have some sort of qualification or some sort of legal background to be an arbitrator, or is it just a case of if both parties agree, then...
If you're over 18 and presumed sane, you can be an arbitrator.
Wow.
Now, you have to be acceptable to both sides, so one would assume that they would select an arbitrator with a competence in the field in which
the dispute arises.
But you know, you need management skills. You need to be able to be confident about the orders you make, the administrative orders you make, and set timelines and manage. So just because you're a great engineer or architect or chemist doesn't mean that you have the people skills to perhaps forward the process to a prompt and cost-efficient resolution. Whereas a mediator, he's entirely dependent on the party's agreement to him or her staying in the process. And the mediator's person skills, I think, are critical, because the mediator's job is to encourage, to communicate, to identify where the issues lie and how they can be resolved. But in many respects, even that's far too complicated, because it can be and ought to be a considerably easier process.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can kind of see that dragging out, because no matter how good the mediator is, if you have two opposing sides at complete loggerheads, the mediator can be as good as they want to be, but there's no way that they're really going to resolve that situation in theory.
Well, people have to decide if they want to move on with their life. And that applies to people in debt, it applies to businesses, it applies to banks. You've got to make a decision. Is now the time for me to leave this baggage behind? What I would call legacy debt or legacy baggage. And frankly, the banks have as much invested in the need for a positive outcome here as the borrowers. It is actually a two-way street. And the process that I engage in, I try to insist that it is a very, very fast process. And that's largely because I lose my own focus or attention if
right,
there's
so
a long
it needs
tail.
To be done quick, you know? If you're going to get your best out of it.
Yeah, frankly, I have no interest in something with a long tail. And if people want to go down that route, then you know, go elsewhere.
Okay.
So the process that has evolved through the debt mediation that I would engage in is that I'm invariably contacted directly by the borrower, or maybe the borrower's solicitor, or their accountant, or somebody who is minding them.
Yeah.
Were it to be a straight piece of legal advice, then there are procedures in being whereby, you know, the client, the borrower, the bank go to a solicitor who then prepare a case for counsel, and that goes to a junior and then perhaps a senior counsel. Mediation is very different. I was going to say it does away with all that, but it doesn't actually do away with all that. It simply doesn't arise.
Okay.
Because the mediation is a totally non-legal process. We don't give financial advice. We don't give legal advice. It is simply a matter of bringing people together and maybe identifying issues that they might be encouraged to look at somewhat differently.
Gotcha.
But it is their decision and no advice is given. And one of the strengths, actually, of the process is the ability to be able to walk away at any time. Because once people know they can do that, they actually get more comfortable and confident about the process. It's counterintuitive in that respect.
Yeah.
So somebody comes, perhaps typically to me, as I say, it could be directly through the email or website or by contact through their solicitor or accountant. That would be typical, but not exclusive.
Yeah.
It could be through a farmer's organization, could be through a trade union.
So if somebody's in this situation, they want to do something about it, they've heard of you, they can get in touch with you. And then what happens? Do they talk to you first about their situation, or what's the process involved?
Well, I ask for a briefing.
Okay.
And that, you know, we're all in the day of, in the age now of communication. So everything I do is electronic. We carry no paper whatsoever.
Okay.
They're required to sign a letter of authority, which is simply a one-liner authorizing whatever bank or financial institution, and this could be a credit union, it could be what are now called vulture funds, the international funds who are buying up property or loans in Ireland, or it could be the pillar banks or some of the exiting banks. And we do that north and south.
Okay.
And a letter of authority simply authorizing that institution to discuss that person's financial affairs with Brendan Kilty, senior counsel mediator.
Gotcha.
And that works for the banks and it works for the borrower.
Okay.
Now, we have established relations now with all banks, all financial institutions, whereby the protocol would be pretty much simply with that letter quoting the account number, we would get in to meet the decision maker within 48 hours, maximum 1 week, no matter who. And if it's not the decision maker, it's somebody who can influence the decision. Ideally, the borrower will come to that meeting. So that would be the first engagement with a neutral mediator between the bank and the borrower. And that ought to be the case because it should be entirely transparent and people should see the process working and build their own confidence, frankly, get their own mojo back in that regard. In the vast majority of cases, that meeting actually doesn't take place in that it goes straight into what's called a caucus, which is a big word that actually means a one-on-one meeting.
Okay.
But it goes into that meeting, and the disadvantage of that, from my perspective, is that the borrower doesn't see the process.
Okay.
But the advantage of a meeting like that is that, and the same with the borrower, by the way, is that it allows people to be more open.
Okay.
To say what will work, what won't work, who's kicked whose hamster,
interesting way of putting it.
Well, who's,
an amazing turn of phrase you have.
There are a lot of hamsters out there.
Okay, so let's say,
and then we get over that, and then at the end of the day, it comes down to money.
Okay.
And we need to get to that position as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's got to be the case that a lot of our listeners out there are, as you said, you can't throw a stone in this country without hitting somebody who's probably in debt at this point, be it through property, be it through loans for businesses, be it through whatever else. So somebody comes to you, I mean, there's a perception out there, I think, from a lot of people that they're stuck in this, they're stuck in the rut of the debt, there's nothing they can do, and the bank or the financial institution is going to be completely inflexible. Is that the case? Or as you said, are the banks kind of looking for a resolution to this?
Well, it is the case in that that is the perception. It's not the case in that banks need a resolution as much or are looking for a resolution. And let me try and, I suppose, stand back and give an overview.
Okay.
We have a justice system which is not fit for purpose. We have a financial institution or a financial system which is not fit for purpose. And I stop Brendan Kilty saying that. It's every commentator for the last number of years has been saying that, including senior members of the judiciary who are concerned about the delays, hence the last referendum to increase the number of judges. So we're dealing with a system that is ancient and no longer relevant to modern circumstances.
Yeah.
I mean, the courtrooms are largely the product of Victorian eras, where there's a dock, there's a witness box, where it's frankly intimidating because it's the majesty of the law.
Yeah.
But we're now a democracy where everyone's meant to be equal, and perhaps we don't need to have that level of severity, that severe formality.
Gotcha.
So that people should be more comfortable about going into their courtroom, it's their justice system, and they are, in our democracy, as equal with any other party, including as equal with the banks.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think there would be a perception that that's not the reality, but that can change and it should be changed. Now, in terms of the need, first of all, people are in debt. They need to wake up and realize, I did not cause this economic crash, and I alone am not going to be the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they need to realize that in a lot of cases, people were given loans they ought never to have been given.
Yeah.
They were never suitable. In America, in some cases, they have legislation which prevents banks from giving the loans unless they factor in not only the value of the property, which can be inflated, but also the individual person's capacity to repay should that value of the property be worthless.
Mm.
And that certainly is a damper. But the individual struggling, and it could be credit card debt, it could be toll bridge debt, it could be, you know, a property that they bought somewhere out foreign because someone said this is where you should go and they followed well-intended advice. They need to get a solution and draw a line in order to be able to move on. And as one person said, this occupies so much of a percentage of my headspace.
Yeah.
So in a sense, the mediation process is actually helping people free up their headspace.
Mm.
They get their mojo back and they move on. Now, the banks have a similar challenge in that while people will give out about the banking system, I have to say almost universally within the banking system, the people I've met are decent, yeah, ordinary. They're not monsters. They're trying to do a job. Occasionally, you do meet an individual who is quite obviously stressed by an agenda that is not arriving in the room. But statistically, you're going to find that in any walk of life anyway.
Yeah.
But the banks themselves will say at a very senior level, look, Mr. Kilty, our accounts, we're not too proud of our own accounts either.
Yeah.
And they recognise that they've made mistakes and therefore they need to resolve issues. So I have found nothing but a purposeful intent on the part of all financial institutions to meet to see if this can be resolved. And we've been able to mediate the resolution of matters where someone has kicked someone's hamster, where things have been said that perhaps ought not to have been said, where, yeah, it's become personalised. It is personal, but it's become, yeah, let's say, overly personalised. And where there might be a receiver involved. And bear in mind, a receiver is a totally unregulated entity. There could be litigation, there could be judgments, there could be bankruptcy. And none of that matters in a mediation environment. All of those can be made disappear if there's transparency and a purposeful intent to get the matter resolved.
Okay.
The fastest we've ever done would be the same day.
Wow.
You know, it's $1 million down to $250,000 in 6.5 hours.
That's a massive, yeah, massive jump.
How did you manage that?
Yeah, I mean, I got asked the same question. How did you manage that?
By talking with people.
And that was presumably the financial institution agreed to come so far, the person involved or the entity involved agreed to go so far, and everyone that's came it. Away happy.
Yeah. Handshake.
Done. Wow. That's because, again, the perception is, and I mean, my perception as well would have been, you know, the bank is going to be very, you know, strict and down the line and very inflexible. But to come down that much, you know, it does show a willingness on both sides to kind of go, okay,
the resolution is
more important. We probably gave this money when we shouldn't have. And also from the other side, the person kind of going, yeah, I took it and maybe I knew this was beyond me as well. So it's quite positive when you look at it that way.
Well, I all I can give you is, let's say, the feedback I get from both sides. And the feedback from the bank's perspective is they need to move on.
Yeah.
They need to lend with unresolved legacy debt issues that actually acts as an anchor dragging their ability to grow again.
Hmm.
Clearly, they don't want to be giving money away and have an obligation to their shareholders to do the best job.
The best they can, yeah.
But it doesn't take too much effort to realize whether this is sustainable or not.
Hmm.
And if it's not sustainable and you're looking at, you know, litigation, or you're looking at repossession, or you're looking at eviction, there is a cost associated with all of that for the financial institution.
I was just thinking that, because obviously the longer this goes on, the longer the dispute goes on, the more it's going to cost the financial institution taking somebody to court, you know, sending out letters, you know, trying to chase up. And the debt's not going anywhere.
Debt's not going anywhere. The debt is actually getting bigger,
mm.
in the sense mm-hmm. that the bank is investing money, paying receivers, solicitors, money that it knows is irrecoverable. It will never see that money again. Now, if that individual in the bank was actually focused on lending to small businesses to get the economy moving, the dividend to the bank, the return to the bank, there would be positive and would be faster and would be certain in that there will be a return, whereas there's absolutely no return in pursuing somebody when it's not sustainable. Now, it requires, would be standard across the board with every financial institution, that people complete a standard financial statement. And that can be downloaded from every bank website. And again, it's not a complicated document. It actually is a benefit to actually have to go through it. It's like a private budget in that you're actually identifying what I have, what I don't have, what I need. And that's now become pretty ubiquitous. That's the standard. And it's critically important that people complete that. Because if they don't complete it, then they will be deemed non-compliant.
Mm.
Whereas if they do complete it, and maybe put with an asterisk, say, I don't know, or, yeah. you know, it raises other questions, but you need to get in the process. Because
yeah.
a lot of this will be process-driven. I try to explain to people that, you know, you're not special. Yeah. You're not the one.
Yeah.
Just go with the program in a sense, complete what is required so that they are not barriers
yeah.
to getting the solution. And you can't expect the bank to deal with someone unless there is transparency.
Yeah.
But once the transparency is there, then, you know, it's no longer an issue. The issue then...
Everybody knows where they stand. Yeah. Everybody knows what they're getting. Yeah.
And that brings great clarity of thought for the borrower as well. I've seen the people come back and say, I was hostile to doing that, but I'm very glad I did it because I now know exactly where I stand. You can then look at what's manageable, what is sustainable, and what is serviceable. And the great irony for me in all of this is that, as I say, we don't give financial advice or indeed legal advice in this process, but banks are now aware, because we're dealing with the banks so often, but the banks now see the benefit of this process to the banks, and they're actually approaching us, asking us to introduce new business to the banks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, we don't take a commission, we don't look for a commission, but I see it very much as by facilitating that, by maybe making the correct introduction, that enables the money to be sourced, what I would call the unblocking money,
yeah.
that would facilitate the arbitration, or the mediation rather.
So essentially by you introducing the bank to new business that's potentially going to be quote-unquote good debt for the bank and good lending and good borrowing, that's going to generate cash for them to turn around to other people and say, look, we know there was an issue with your loan or your finance, let's see what we can do about it. It's a fantastic system. And I mean, as you said, it's also building your relationship with the bank as well.
And Brendan, do you deal only with debt of that kind of size, or if somebody is like, maybe it's only 1,000 or 2,000, but it is serious to them, is that something you deal with, or do you, you know, what way does that work?
I'm now building a team of people because clearly we're inundated with this type of work. And I take the view that, you know, somebody worrying about a few hundred or thousand, that to them is as important as somebody worrying about
1 or 2 million. Yeah.
Well, I was actually with somebody recently, and he had a figure down, and I said, is that, you know, there's no letter after it. Is that thousands? No, he said it's millions.
Wow.
Now, but to him, or to somebody else, that being in hundreds, that figure is as important.
It's important.
And you know, if you can, you mentioned the last time we were on air, I think the butterfly syndrome, you know, if you can sort out that problem, you've no idea the good, the societal benefit to that person that will be reflected in their increased mojo, their better relationships domestically, their sense of confidence, their sense of purpose. You know, we are a great nation. Let there be no doubt about that. We are an exceptional nation. And perhaps by this process, we can put mojo back in this nation.
I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, small business people, you know, somebody say coming out of college and they have loans from buying books or paying fees as a student.
They're just living.
They're living, kind of paying that debt. And they may want to start a business, or they maybe want to do something, you know, and once that's hanging over them, if they can get rid of that, then they're going to be more inclined to go to the bank and say, I have this great idea for a business. I need some money to get it up and running off the ground. Whereas if they still have something else hanging over them, it's less likely to happen.
Well, I can tell you without any difficulty, if somebody got money from a bank for student loan, certainly because they're at that critical stage in life where they're not earning enough to be able to have a life and service the loan.
Yeah.
But the bank would not have given that money initially if the bank did not consider that an investment in a lifetime relationship with that individual.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't be looking at it as a student loan with a negative. It should be an investment in the future.
Okay.
And what I can tell you is that legacy debt is not a barrier. A perception of bad credit rate or a factual bad credit rating is not a barrier. What people need to know is how you're going to deal with the past, warts and all. And if that means a resolution with a bank, then that resolution is invariably available if approached correctly through mediation.
Yeah.
And other banks, that will invariably end your relationship with that bank because they're being burnt, to use their phrase, they're taking a hit. But other banks will not necessarily view you in a negative light.
Because you sought a resolution and went acted through on it.
So, Brendan, we are running out of time, unfortunately.
We're going to need another show with Brendan, I think.
What I'm getting from this is if you are in debt, first of all, don't get into the headspace of there's no way out, because there are things that can be done. That's the message I'm taking first and foremost.
Absolutely, yeah.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you or your team, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Well, we're social media driven environment. They can text or email, or hopefully we'll have a drop-in centre open in the not too distant future.
Brilliant.
But we leave the details on the website for Dublin City FM 103.2.
And we'll put them up on the Upstarts website as well.
We'll put them up in Upstarts.
If at some stage you want to maybe organise a seminar so that people can come together for
I think that's a great idea.
You know, first step or whatever. But really the message I want to get out there is that it is not hopeless. You did not cause the problem. You are not going to be the solution of the problem. And by the way, you are great.
Brilliant. Brendan,
always a pleasure to have
you. Thank you so much for coming back in. I think this is going to be absolutely so useful for so many people. And as I said, we will put the details up there. And definitely, I think that's a great idea, that maybe if people are interested, send us a quick email. And if we get enough numbers, we'll organise maybe a day that Brendan could sit down with these people. So we are running out of time. So with that in mind, unfortunately, all we have left to say is Happy Friday. Bye-bye.